Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, the fastest growing, and indeed the largest segment of society. To those who know that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, media, and other human institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, 877-300-7645. It is as it was thought to be. Public dissatisfaction in America with government, with both political parties, with the economy, with the approach to Islamic terrorism, drove a majority of those who voted to vote out the incumbent. It was a blowout in the Senate for Democrats. It was a repudiation of abomination. Reuters is reporting Republicans rode a wave of voter discontent to seize control of the U.S. Senate, dealing a punishing blow to Barack Hussein Obama that will, they say, limit his legislative agenda. Yeah, he's done. Well, if you constrain something to nothing, and that's what you mean by limit, then you'd be correct. And it says that it may force him to make a course correction for his last 2 years. Oh, come on. It's over. I mean, the only question about abomination is, A, will the Republicans continue to bomb the Islamic State and engage in the war in Syria? B, will they repeal significant aspects of Obamacare? Those are really the only questions, because the things that the Republicans are going to bring up, and they'll bring up early in their new term, in January or February of next year, is that energy reform, which this nation is 40 or 50 years past due, and I suspect that it will be energy reform that will be very displeasing to liberals, particularly abomination. Keystone Pipeline will be approved. Drilling leases will be expanded off America's coasts. If the Republicans have half a brain among them, they will open up the Anwar region in Alaska for drilling. Fracking will continue and probably be expanded. Those are the things that will happen in an energy policy, along with the fact that the incentives will be reinstated for renewable forms of energy, particularly for wind and solar. Economically, there will be tax reform. The taxes that Obama imposed that have frozen the economy will be rescinded. Particularly corporate tax is likely to be drawn down because it's indefensible at its present level. So there will be economic reform in terms of tax reform. There'll be energy reform. Those things are for sure. The only questions are, will we continue in another winless, counterproductive war in Syria, or recognize that we cannot beat the Islamic State or any manifestation of Islam with bullets and bombs? And how far will the Republicans go to rescind what is now very unpopular legislation in the case of national health care with Obamacare? That's really the only issues. But for those of us who like gridlock, we are more gridlocked than we were before, and that's a very good thing. There's almost nothing that Washington does that is productive. Occasionally, the contract with America that was promoted by Newt Gingrich is what gave life to the Clinton administration. He takes all the credit for it, but it was Newt Gingrich's contract with America that revitalized the economy. Ronald Reagan's implementation of supply-side economics was masterful and extraordinarily beneficial. But apart from those things, most everything our government has done over the last 50 years has been counterproductive. And so gridlock is a very good thing by comparison to them acting. The Republican, the Reuters article continues with the Republican rout on Tuesday. By the way, I did vote for, cast a vote for three things, mostly 99.99% to establish proof of residency. But the amendment to the Virginia Constitution relative to forgiving property tax for widows of veterans, I voted no, and it passed overwhelmingly, maybe 90% in favor. It's still troubling that so many Americans think that the U.S. military is a productive, beneficial force. Propaganda is still very strong in this area. The two candidates that I voted for were both libertarians. I didn't know either candidate. It's just that it was my way of registering a vote in such a way that I was doing so saying, I want none of the above. I want us, if America were to go back to only those things that are specifically called out in the U.S. Constitution, that would be a good thing. And to remove America from all of those things that it has decided to do politically that are not constitutional. The two people I voted for both garnered 2% of the vote. Pretty pathetic. The Republican rout on Tuesday was widespread and deep. In what was bound to be seen as a sharp rebuke of Obama, it actually wasn't as much a rebuke on Obama, even though he was stunningly unpopular, as were the candidates that Hillary Rotten Clinton campaigned for, as it was a rebuke on Washingtonian policies and government in general. It lurched from crisis to crisis, and most of which, of course, with Obama, he created, and became unbelievably unpopular, which made him unwelcome among Democratic candidates. Obama, who watched the election returns alone in the White House, saw little to warm his spirits, as if he has multiple spirits. We'll say he has one spirit, and it's demonic. He scheduled a news conference for today. It will transpire during the end of the broadcast of this program. And he invited Democratic and Republican leaders of Congress to the White House. What he's going to do is to say, you know, we took a shellacking, but, you know, he wants to remain relevant, and now he wants to compromise and work with the Republicans. And for 6 years, all this idiot has done is tongue-lash Republicans, speak down to them. He has gone out of his way to make it sound like he is the man of opportunity and of progress, and that all the Republicans have done is to try to stonewall all of the great progress and initiatives that he wished to impose. He has never been a compromiser. He is a stalwart liberal. And now that he will offer to compromise, it's laughable. It's not in his DNA. This article continues. Obama, who watched the, said, I should say, that this next article, which is on the same theme, continues with the following. Republicans capture the majority control of the Senate, gaining at least 7 seats as Democrats faced strong political headwinds in the midterm elections, where discontent with President Obama was a decisive thing. Actually, in the exit polls, that wasn't the most decisive thing. The most decisive thing was dissatisfaction with the way America is waging war on terrorism, read Islam, disillusionment with the economy, disillusionment with government at large. On an election night that saw sweeping victories for their party, Republican Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin and Rick Scott in Florida won re-election. Scott Walker has been interesting because he has opposed union control over the state. And Republican Larry Hogan won the Maryland governorship in a startling upset, which is remarkable. Maryland, which exists basically to support the federal government in Washington, D.C., is, like Washington, D.C., overwhelmingly liberal. And for them to elect a Republican governor is remarkable. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback narrowly won re-election in a race Democrats thought was within their grasp. In the House, Republicans appeared headed for their biggest majority in decades, and that is what transpired. Republicans won Democratic-held seats in places that Democrats have held sway for a long time. Arkansas, Colorado, Montana, North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, which is hard to imagine going to the Republicans, and Iowa, moving beyond the 6-seat gain they needed to win a majority, and even more power to shape the final 2 years of the Obama presidency. It's not going to shape the Obama presidency. They're going to rebuke it. Without his majority, Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid of Nevada congratulated the Republicans and their new leader, Mitch McConnell. The message, he said, from the voters is clear. Now, what's going to follow the is clear is a lie. He is a politician, after all. He said the message from voters is clear. They want us to work together. This was Harry Reid. No, they don't want you to work together. That is not clear. You were rebuked. You were dismissed. You were swept aside. They don't want to work with you. That's the message. The message is that liberal, big spending, massive control politics, redistribution of wealth is something that the majority of voters said they did not want to continue. You lost, Harry. They aren't going to work with you. They're going to work against you. That's what they were sent to Washington to achieve. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Continue to review the past elections and then move on to some of the other interesting stories, not only in Israel, but also in Ukraine. So USA Today is reporting, Dateline Washington, beginning with dissatisfied with President Obama's leadership and dismayed by the failure of both parties to work together on big problems, American voted Tuesday to shake things up. This is USA Today. The writer, the journalist, if you want to call them, I think they're actually a political pundit, said the result, they may have made things worse. You know, it's interesting in politics is that if you are not in a position of control, then you're crying out for let's work together. And if you're in a position where you are can't influence your control, then you steamroll over the minority. And so the Democrats have gone from being in a position where they controlled the Senate and they controlled the administration and the White House, and of course they control now the Supreme Court. So they were in a dominant position. And they got very little accomplished, and what they did get accomplished was counterproductive. Their management of the economy has been dismal. Their management of health care has been worse than dismal, and their engagements with the Islamic militancy around the world has been astonishingly counterproductive. So here again, you've got someone engaged in journalism, who was typically liberal, looking at what occurred as being bad and looking at it incorrectly, that the voters were somehow influenced to cast a vote for Republicans because they were dismayed by the failure of both parties to work together. I would tell you that there's probably 0% of those who cast their vote for Republicans who did so because they were dissatisfied with the fact that the Republicans were not supporting Democratic initiatives. And when you control the Senate and you control the White House, the initiatives are Democratic. There'd be 0%. I mean, she wasn't even in the same zip code of truth here. For the fourth time in five elections, Americans voted for change as Republicans gained control of the Senate. But voters expressed scant enthusiasm for the GOP, not to mention for the Democrats and the president. And the fact is that the majority, that's why I began the show as I do, the majority of Americans are dissatisfied with government. The majority of Americans think that government is counterproductive. The majority of Americans do not trust Congress, Senate, White House, the Supreme Court, the justice system, their police, their economy, the media. The vast majority of Americans are disillusioned. They don't trust anyone in positions of authority, and it's the right choice. Now the polarization has contributed to a government in gridlock, and it's likely to be reinforced, not relieved, by the returns. The fact is that, for the most part, this government, particularly over the last 2 years, has been gridlocked because the Republican control of Congress was sufficient to keep the president from getting much of his legislative agenda passed. And so, for the most part, the Republicans in Congress have passed scores of initiatives that have all died in the Senate. And so that we have been in a situation of gridlock. And with the Senate and the House now in the hands of Republicans, even though they don't have a two-thirds majority to overturn a presidential veto, they can make it extremely embarrassing and extremely painful and extremely a negative for Obama's reputation to continue to pass legislation regarding energy policy, regarding a sane approach to Islamic terrorism, regarding tax reform and therefore job creation and economic revival in this country. They can pass legislation, get it through the Congress, get it through the Senate, and put it on the president's desk, and then browbeat him into not vetoing it. Because at this point, if he's simply a destructive force, having been so repudiated in this last election, it puts him in his valued legacy in a very, very dark place. So at this point, if there is gridlock, it's going to occur on one place, and that's the desk of abomination. And I'm not so sure that he can consistently survive there. We'll be back. So it will be interesting, I guess, to see how the new Senate tries to deal with issues like immigration. Immigration happens to be one of those issues that is almost impossible to deal with because Hispanics typically vote in unison. And even though the majority of Hispanics work and therefore they'd be far better off with more conservative Republican leadership than redistribution of wealth, liberal Democratic leadership, the Democrats have recognized that they get the majority of the Hispanic vote, legal or illegal, and therefore they have put themselves, and part of this, the reason they get the vote, is they put themselves in a position where they steadfastly oppose any form of immigration reform that in any way weakens the status of immigrants. They are far more likely to provide amnesty for those that are already here. They're far more likely to provide incentives for those that are still on the other side of the border to cross the border. And they're far more likely to run ads, as America does. I mean, America's advertising campaign in Mexico would choke you. And it just, And it, what they're advertising is come to America and sign up for food stamps. Come to America and sign up for welfare. Come to America and get housing assistance. They're actually recruiting illegal aliens into America with the promise of government subsidies. And so it is a liberal, democratic initiative thought through for the express purpose of increasing the number of Hispanics that will vote for them. And the Hispanics are the fastest growing group in America. So it puts immigration reform in a very difficult position. If you try to do the right thing relative to citizenships and jobs and a proper economic response to illegal immigration, then you have the Hispanic voting bloc far more egregious, far more isolated against you. And yet, if you're like the Democrats and appease the Hispanic voting bloc, you weaken the country. So it is a very difficult predicament, and I don't think there is a resolution. Now, at least none that's being discussed. If you were to do one thing, in my view, and in fact, I would do two things. I think you could do two things and profoundly change the issue of illegal immigration, at least the irritants associated with illegal immigration. The first thing is you declare drugs legal. And you might wonder why that makes such a difference. Well, the drug lords that are making Mexico a killing field and are causing such upheaval in South and Central America that the death zones that people are fleeing would cease to exist if we were to legalize drugs. They exist because drugs are illegal and are being smuggled, and anyone in opposition to smuggling drugs is killed. So it would change the equation enormously. The second thing is to do away with income tax, both state and federal, and replace it with a national consumption tax so that everybody pays their fair share. If you were to do those things, then those that are here would be paying for their services. Now, you know, I would go one step further, and I would repeal, I think it's the 19th Amendment, that awards citizenship to anyone born here, even if they're born to those who are here illegally. I think that's foolish. In addition, there ought to be a limit on government subsidies. For example, I don't think you're entitled to any more Social Security than you paid in. If you didn't pay into Social Security, you shouldn't receive Social Security. If you didn't pay in to the federal government, you ought not receive food stamps. They're not even food stamps anymore. It's a fraud-laden government credit card. Debit card, probably. But there ought to be limits in terms of time. You know, you'd have to be an American citizen for at least 20 years before you could even apply for government subsidies. And that you ought not be able to take more than you paid in. I think those changes would have a fairly profound influence on illegal immigration, but for the most part, it is such a sticky wicket because of the Hispanic vote consistently falling on the side of Democrats for the express purpose of making illegal immigration easy and acceptable. Hello, Glenn, what do you think about the great upheaval that took place yesterday?
Profound, or, you know, or very pronounced. About what you said about making drugs legal, certainly at very least to decriminalize them and stop ruining people's lives for having some tiny quantity of marijuana or detecting cocaine on the money in their wallet and saying that they were drug traffickers, things like that, and filling up these privatized prisons with their sweatshops.
Yeah, let's talk about that. There is a difference between decriminalizing something and making it legal. And I would go all the way to making it legal. And while I would, while I agree decriminalizing it takes tens of billions of dollars of expense out of our judicial system and probably $100 billion worth of expense out of the prison system for people who are in the court system and who are in prison because they were convicted of drug possession. And so decriminalizing it, right, yeah, it solves a financial burden. You've got people that the government and the taxpayer are paying, they're feeding and paying enormous amounts of money to incarcerate. They would actually be out and could be productive contributors to society. And that would be the advantage of decriminalizing. Now, the reason I would make it legal as opposed to just decriminalizing is I think for the first time, for people that may be just tuning in, I am wholly opposed to narcotics. I have never used narcotics, and I am opposed to narcotics. I think you are foolish to dumb yourself down. Life is a challenge, and to try to engage in life dumbed down, drugged, makes that challenge almost impossible to prevail. I think you're stupid to use any form of drug, and particularly the drugs that have such a negative effect on your health, like heroin and cocaine and methamphetamines. And there's lots of drugs that are really devastating. Right. You work in the healthcare industry, you know that there are drugs that are devastating.
And there would be some of that devastation initially, but then there would be a shakeout and things would plateau up. Right. And as long as you don't have push marketing like the Brits push marketed opium to the Chinese, the problems would level off.
Yeah, I mean, by making it legal, I would have you can't advertise it. You can't promote it. It's like cigarettes. You really can't advertise cigarettes today. You can't advertise it. You can't promote it. The package would come with severe warnings on it. With exception of marijuana, which I really don't care about because I don't think marijuana is any different than alcohol. So with exception of marijuana, I think that by legalizing drugs, you're actually going to get lower consumption than you are with drugs being illegal.
Wow.
Because there's a huge part of people.
Yet.
No, it's a huge part of people's psyche that choose to do things because they're rebelling against society, because there's a risk. You know, I don't know if you know this or not, but there is a very significant number of 30-something year-old Americans that go into retail stores and shoplift something insignificant just for the thrill of it.
For the thrill, yeah, adrenaline.
They have the money.
That tells you, well, there was the Arabian princess that got caught shoplifting in some prominent New York store.
Yeah, exactly. It's why, you know, if you look at tattoos, for example, in people my generation, I'm almost 60, those who were tattooed were those who were outcasts. You were a biker. You were enlisted in the military. You were a rebel if you were wearing a tattoo. And it was a means to rebel against society. And now if you realize that in the 20-somethings in particular, even among women, tattoos are so common, the majority of men and women now have tattoos. And so it was a way of expressing rebellion, just as during the 60s, long hair, rock music. And so I think that the rebellious aspect of drugs will, by making it legal and running campaigns as to how stupid it is, I don't think we'll see an increase in consumption. But by making it legal, A, you eliminate the entire crime cartel from the equation. B, you make the drugs safer, and And C, those who are selling the drugs are now taxed, you know, because you put the same kind of tax on the drugs that you have on alcohol, where there's a penalty tax put on it, because if they call it a sin tax. So I'd go all the way to legalizing them with very strong campaigns saying, you know, this is legal, but stupid.
Well, the other aspect of street drug use is that a lot of people are unconsciously medicating for mood disorders. They don't like the way they feel, the same reason they steal, they shoplift. They don't like the way they feel. They want to feel better, so they want a rush or they want a good feeling. So
I did a whole show on the drugs and the rate of sale, the amount of sales of various drugs in America, and mood drugs are the are among the dominant drugs in America. And if you combine mood and pain medication, and pain medication is taken a lot of times, really, because people just don't feel good, so they'll take pain medication. But the two of them are dominant, and they are, in my view, in most cases, a recreational drug. Welcome back to Shatterness. We've just talked drug policy with Glenn, and I think both of us are in favor of what would be a libertarian view, which is to either decriminalize or, in my case, go all the way to legalizing all drugs, knowing that there are very few drugs that are helpful. The vast majority are harmful. They should not be used. But people ought to have not only the freedom to do so, but you change the judicial system in America and the militarization of our police and the prison population, where America has the largest prison population in the world. You change the dynamics and the freedom of America so measurably when you do this kind of thing that it's the right call. Glenn, what do you think about the likelihood, since Republicans ran on tax reform and energy reform, that we will get meaningful energy reform in the next 2 years or 4 years?
Okay, I think if I may, like, there's a second, 1 second, I'd like to mention something you said about tattoos.
Yes.
One thing about the tattoos, the ink thing, it's humans are pack animals, and they need a sense of social belonging. And so whether it's a kid joining a street gang and getting the tats for a street gang in L.A., or the people I see around here doing it as a novelty thing, or a Navy sailor. It has to do with, you know, identifying with a group consciousness, you know, whether it's joining an Islamic, militant group. People need to belong. So I just, not always, I wouldn't take necessarily the rebellion, although there's that, but there's also the not only rebelling against one thing, but wanting to belong to something else as well.
Yeah, I remember back in my college days, which was really kind of the last time I was a belonger, how being initiated in the fraternity was such a big deal to me. And then belonging to the chic clubs was a big deal to me in high school and in college. And from that point on, I sort of lost my enthusiasm for belonging. And now there's only one thing that I belong to that I care about, and that's the covenant. So I'm not much of a belonger anymore, other than the covenant. But I understand your point. I'm not disagreeing with your point.
That's partly a function of age as well, actually. Like, if I'm thinking about an Indian culture, you know, they see the phases of life, you know, the male, you know, you're joining society, you're marrying, you're raising your family, having your kids, raising your family, and then middle age is kind of reserved for spiritual questing. You know, so there's an age thing in there. So that, you know, it makes some sense. You know, testosterone levels drop. You have your kids. You know, have time and energy to think about other things.
Yeah.
As to your question about tax, energy. You want to say something?
Yeah, energy policy. I'm fairly confident that Republicans will override the president's objection to the Keystone Pipeline. The Keystone Pipeline is designed to bring the oil shale down from Canada. Down through the center of the United States to the refineries in Texas, which have considerable excess capacity. And so that is, I think, highly likely. But whether or not the Republicans will also release the California coast, the East Coast, and the Gulf, and continue to expand fracking and then pass legislation. Go ahead.
They need to get the fracking under control because of the pumping all these toxins into the ground and causing some of these earth tremors in Oklahoma that doesn't ever have them and stuff. I think there are some problems with that, but just between the Liberty rig and the pipeline from Canada, plus they're finding that these oil wells that were thought to be empty are refilling and that sort of thing. So, there's no real need for all that.
Oil is a renewable resource, and there is considerable evidence now that a very substantial amount of oil actually came from a geological manifestation of pressures, as opposed to strictly the decomposition
ferns. Yeah, I mean, people make mistakenly say dinosaurs. It's not decomposition. Decomposition of dinosaurs.
Right.
It's the ferns from the Carboniferous period or whatever. These 40, 60 foot ferns and the lush vegetation that was supposedly compressed.
Yeah, and also a lot of oceanic life. If you look at the places where we have the largest oil reserves, they're at an elevation typically that was underwater,
and there is
much more life, both plant and plankton, really tiny animal life, in the shallow oceans and shallow lakes, and that is a significant amount of that helped to create oil reserves, but it appears that the majority of oil is actually not fossil fuels.
From the center of the earth.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the break.